Bold One South Africa, Musi Maimane, the leader. Very welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Heiner. I'm looking forward to our conversation. Yeah?
Musi, it's been a couple of years since you've left the Democratic Alliance.
Yeah.
There's no love lost between you and your former political home. Why is that?
Firstly, let me be understanding of what my organizing vision for my own life is and what I believe this country needs. I've always thought to myself, I wanted to build one South Africa. I think black people, white people, Indian people, colored people can work together to build a prosperous nation. I think our politics must change from politics of black versus white or having black parties or white parties. I think it's dangerous. It's not a contestation of ideas then. It becomes this thing where we just go express our race. So when I was inside the DA, I was very conscious about building that vision. I felt that at the time, the DA could become a party that holds the majority, the party of the center, the party of all South Africans. And in 2019, when many, particularly white Afrikaans voters, moved to the Freedom Front Plus, there was an impulse inside the organization that said, let's go after those voters and become a minority party, become a party that will so-called claim now we're just colorblind, which means that we're just minority focused. We ignore historical injustices, all of those kinds of things. And in truth, I wasn't going to put up with that. And so that's why when I started Build One South Africa, is because it is out of that vision that I believe. So in truth, I don't share the same vision as the DA. I think the DA has a job. It has to exist. And I am big enough and strong enough to know that this is not personal. This is about where this country's got to go. And we can't make our politics politics of just race or minoritism or regional or religion. It has to be politics of the ideas of and values that hold citizens that we share common values with.
Isn't that the reason why the Moonshot Pact may likely not work? Because it's a collection of minorities or minority players. Some of them have similar ideologies. Some are to the left and to the right of that. Are they going to get along? We've seen that they can't do it in coalitions and local government.
I actually think that as much as that is a conglomeration of parties that must stand on one side, my job is to focus on the outstanding 12%, 13% that sits in the middle. Because if all of those parties who are in that pool come together and they get the electoral results that they need, there's still this outstanding chunk in the middle that must get us over the 51% line on either end. So in some ways, the danger behind being in the moonshot or whatever this charter is that one, voters might get confused in thinking if you vote for the one party, you're just voting for the DA, you might as well just do that. That's one thing. The second thing is, if previously people did not vote for those parties in their individual senses, they're not going to suddenly vote for them because they are all in one place. It's a contestation. This next year's election is a choice between old versus new. Old parties that are indicating signs of decline and new who are focused on the future. That's the choice. And I'm wanting to work with the new so that we can achieve that new centrist ground so that more and more people can actually participate in the elections who weren't doing so before.
And you believe that's 10 to 12% of the electorate?
I think it's bigger than that. I'm just telling you what I can go for. I think that there are 5.4 million ANC voters who are unclear about who to vote for because they've also grown disillusioned with the ANC. I think there are voters who have opted out of democracy, who are registered to vote and not voting, that we need to talk to. And then there are voters who are unregistered, who are particularly young. I heard a very frightening stat that between 18 and 20-year-olds, 90% of them are unregistered to vote. So those are young people that are available to vote, and we need to inspire them with a message of hope that this is about their jobs, it's about their future, it's about their education and how they are safe, and invite them to come in and in fact register and vote. So there's a whole host of South Africans who, if you sent them to the ballot now, could not make that choice, and I'm saying I want to be that choice for them.
How do you plan to do that? Building South Africa has kept a relatively low profile compared to, let's say, the other guys with loud voices. How do you plan to do all of this in a relatively very short space of time?
So when we launched last year in September, we wanted to do a couple of things that were very intentional. One, we wanted to go reach 9 provinces, and we went ahead and set up structures of some form or another in all 9 provinces. So we've seen some profound growth. We've been recruiting activists on the ground because we want to be a grassroots-oriented organization. We then made a public call to say anyone who wants to stand for public office can do so. So over 458 people applied, and we asked each of them to bring 1,000 signatures. Those signatures not only demonstrate the person comes from a constituency, but they do that. We've unveiled the first 24, an unbelievable talented group of South Africans that are diverse. I think we've been competing even in the media space, in the traditional and conventional media space, by the works that we've done in advocating, for example, around issues of load shedding. We took the government to court and successfully won when they gave us the order that says that our alternative buildings must have our alternative energy. So police stations, hospitals, all of that must have alternative energy. There are some practical things that we're doing. So, for example, I was in Limpopo in a community that doesn't have water, and now we're fighting to get them a borehole. So we've become very practical on the ground, very advocating online, but also in our social media platforms. You know, I think there are very few other political leaders that have got a bigger Twitter account than I do, or in all other social media platforms is Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. That's where we think young people are at. So we've got to be able to talk to them on those platforms, and we've been very active in that space.
You don't think that the opposition as it is now space is perhaps a little bit overcrowded?
No, I don't. There are only 12 parties in parliament. What South Africa doesn't have is distinct ideas. So let me take you through the numbers. You get the ANC, who writ large are corrupt. We know that. Secondly, you get the DA, who are a minority party. That's not an idea. That's just a constituency of race. You get the EFF, who are mobilizing on the basis of race or a particular position. What happens after that? You either have a regional party, religious party, or racial party. I mean, the Freedom Front Plus represents a very important constituency in the country, one of the constituencies, as any other person, as is the Afrikaans community. The IFP represents the Zulu community, another important community in our country. So you kind of get these fragmentations, or you get religious parties, ACTP or Al-Jamaa, etc. What is the choice then? You can't just say, this is a choice. I'm going to express my race, or I'm going to express my religion, or I'm going to express my region. That doesn't work. So the space in the middle, though, this space of building one South Africa, focus on economic growth that partners between the state and the private sector, that ensures that we prioritize the poor, that ensures that education works. No one's occupying that space. So that's where we come in.
In 2019, the Constitutional Court ruled that individuals, just like in local government elections, should now also be able to stand nationally. Mm. Parliament's done nothing about it. The elections are next year. Do you think it's going to happen? And if it happens, how is this going to change the landscape?
So we fought that court case, right, and won successfully at the time through a colleague of mine who worked together in New Rise, New Nation Movement. I know that case quite well. We made submissions to Parliament about an alternative bill. We know that Parliament was useless in being able to deliver a bill that achieves electoral reform. Because actually the case wasn't just that individuals must stand. The case said, if you want individuals to stand, then you must reform the entire electoral system. Because what they've got now is the worst of all worlds. They've created a system where the ballot will be long. You've got a whole list of individuals who will stand. They don't only stand nationally, their constituency is defined as a province. They've made it impossible to comply even with the Constitutional Court judgment. But the bill that has been proposed made this recommendation that within 4 months after it's been signed into law, a panel must then be established. The president signed the bill in April. 4 months on, no panel has been put to look into the broader electoral system. And we've got to challenge the electoral system. We've got to build a constituency-based system. We've got to get politicians to be held accountable. And for me, is that ultimately we end up with an electoral system where there can be direct election of even the president. Because when you do that, the president knows that he's not a servant of the party, but a servant of the people. So reformation and changing all of that must take place. We must do that. So for me, that bill is wrong, and that's why it's been challenged in court now. With elections being around the corner, I think the fix is to make sure that that panel comes into board, and then we can chart a pathway as to how we get through these issues.
Probably not going to happen for these next general elections.
Well, it's already signed into law. So for next year, and this is a very public service announcement, you will have for the first time 3 ballots, which is not standard. Normally, you'd only have two ballots. You'd have ballots that also have independents on them, so people must look carefully as to who they want to vote for. And then thirdly, it's going to be, as you all know, there are 10 elections that take place, one national and in provinces. So you'll also have a provincial ballot that comes in with that. So I think citizens must be quick to look at what they need to do. And it's why we started Build One South Africa, actually, because we thought if you ask an individual to just stand for an election, they need 90,000 votes, whereas if you stand underneath a party, you need 40,000 votes. So in our view, for the same votes that an individual would get, we could get two seats. So that's why we had to go the route tactically as to why we did it. But I still believe in the principle of accountability for people where they come from.
Rolling this out in such a short space of time holds the potential for one giant mess come election day and come the counting of the results.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. And let me hope that the Concord could give us sensible directions as to how we manage it. I think in all intents and purposes, we're going to have to agree on special rules for 2024 and then immediately reform the Electoral Act so that we are ready for 2029. The ANC has been slack on this issue. Nelson Mandela wanted a reform. Francois Slabbert commissioned, I think President Mbeki wanted the same. President Motlanthe raised the same issue about how do we reform the elections. And then I think even now we've just commissioned this report and the Constitutional Court. It's the ANC being lazy. So they're creating these time pressure issues. But in all fairness, they should have done it a long time ago.
Nobody can deny South Africa is in an absolute mess. Everybody opposing the ANC says they can fix it. The ANC says, oh, wow, after 30 years, we realize there is a problem. How are you going to fix it?
Let's do the first thing, which is build a capable and competent state. Where's the ANC failed is that it captured the state. And it's in their documents. So it wasn't like a secret. They said in the National Democratic Revolution, we are going to capture the state. And they did, and they become corrupt. So let's free the state. Because if you can't build a competent, digital, future-facing state, you can't deliver on anything. So my first job is to make sure the cabinet is smaller, appoint the best people for the job of government, and build a state that can deliver. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, let's prioritize. We can't do everything, right? And our number one priority is about let's get a job in every home. Let's ensure that citizens, wherever they are, there must be someone working in that household. Because you can't have 40% of households in this country dependent on remittances. So let's do that. The third thing is, let's educate, educate, educate. The circumstances of your birth cannot be the determinants of what education you get. So if we digitize our education system, make sure the first 1,000 days of every child are well looked after, those children can eat and have development that takes place. We get the best teachers in science, technology, English, and mathematics, and then ensure that we give vouchers to parents so that they can choose where their kids can go. We start to transition what our education looks like. And then lastly, the one fear all of us have, regardless of where you come from, is that crime is a serious issue in this country. 70 of our fellow countrymen are murdered every single day. Now, murder is murder, whether it's in a farm, whether it's in the streets, it's murder. So we've got to bring policing lower down to local levels, create a proper intelligence so that we can catch the criminals and make sure they end up behind bars. And more than anything, let's appoint the best leadership to lead the police with the priority of murder. Because we saw it happen in 2009, 2010, just before the World Cup. We prioritized and invested in the policing, and we saw crime actually go down. What's happened post that is we've underfunded the police, we've allowed poor leadership to take over policing, and we've got a minister of police who's, for me, in my humble opinion, is inappropriate and incapable of fixing crime. So let's bring it down. Let's aggregate that with the Metro Police so that if you're a crook in South Africa, you need to know we're watching you and you are going to pay.
How do you disentangle a captured state? We've seen in many of the coalitions like in Ekurhuleni, they struggled to govern. They in turn blamed city management and the civil servants who have all been deployed, I suppose, by the ruling party at the time. So what does it matter if a political party, or there's a changing of the guard in parliament when the entire civil service and is already populated by people?
It's going to be a rough 2 years, but it's a 2 years we have to brace ourselves for. Because like in 1994, you inherited an apartheid state and there were certain people that really shouldn't have been there, and you had to spend time because they're increasing their contracts. You've got to buy them out. And this is not a racial issue. It's just about making sure the corrupt are weeded out. I think it would be also unfair to just blanketly characterize every civil servant in that manner. I think there are some citizens who work in the state that get up every day, do a decent day's job, want to teach well, want to be best healthcare workers, best police people. I think there are Home Affairs officials who get up, go to work, do their job. What we've got to do is give them the leadership that they need. So for me, the 2-year period after that is not only do you make sure the cabinet is smaller, but ensure that director generals who are incompetent are removed. Because when you do that, you also can minimize the layers of government. I mean, government's biggest dilemma is that the chain of command is from DG, DDG, chief director, deputy chief director, chief of stapling, chief of pen handling. It's insane. So let's clean it out at that senior level and make sure that we get the best leaders and minimize the layers as possible. So that's what the next 2 years is going to be like. And I know people might be hearing this and think, I work for the civil servant. Are you saying I'm going to lose my job? I'm not talking about people who are working and doing their jobs. I'm saying if you've looted and you are in layers that are captured, we must remove you. And I think that is, in my view, I would estimate between 10 to 15% of some of what goes on in the civil service that we can rationalize.
South Africa is no longer the darling of the world. We don't no longer lead by example. And our foreign policy is at times quite questionable. Our place in the world, where do you think that is? Is it with BRICS, a growing non-alignment with the West? Do we align with the West? Where should our future lie? And does this government know what they are doing right now?
I think South Africa's foreign policy suffers because of the ANC. The ANC, as a liberation movement, keeps old alliances who are fellow liberation partners. So their alignment with Russia has got nothing to do with Russia's investment into this country. It's got everything to their relationship with the Soviet Union. Their alignment with ZANU-PF in Zimbabwe as elections are taking place is because of old historic liberation ties. And I can go through Cuba, Venezuela, and so many other places. So the fix is about removing the ANC in many ways, because it will reform our foreign policy. Because our foreign policy, as enshrined in our constitution, must remind us on dignity and human rights, that we can't partner with people who violate human rights. And it must be putting South Africa's interests first on a bilateral trade basis, which means that it's not even always a choice between East or West, because we do a lot of trade with China, we do a lot of trade with India, but we also do and benefit from trade with the USA in terms of the AGOA. What I would say, Musi Maimane, as I say, let's not depend on this bipolar universe. Let's create a multipolar universe. And multipolarity is about, let's create a new center. And Africa and intra-African trade is the way forward, so that we can strengthen not only agreements on Africa free trade, but we better at trading, so that we can create more jobs, build more infrastructure. This is a continent with 1.2 billion people by 2040. There's an opportunity within that that can ensure that we better trade. That we are seen as a nation that, even on a foreign policy basis, are regressing, has everything to do with the issues that sit within the ANC. And we've got to move quickly and ensure that we modernize our foreign policy.
Do you think rural voters, the rural electorate, for example, who do not necessarily have access to the media that we do have on an urban basis, and who are traditional ANC voters, are they as hutful as the urban population seems to be? And how powerful is their vote still? Will they be mobilized? Are they going to keep the ANC in office?
It has to be mobilized. I think rural voters are as hutful as urban voters. It's just that often reaching a rural voter is more expensive than reaching an urban voter. But the degrees of an openness to change, and I don't say it to be Pollyannaish, so let me, in 2021, we set up micro-political parties in rural communities. Mopane, I can take you to so many. Actually, what was genius about that is that we saw people directly vote for their candidates because they come from their communities and they could vote for them. So I think in rural communities, citizens are waiting for someone to come and tap into what they already know to do. Because trust me, a rural person, you know, you talk about urban people they suffer from the fact that their kids are leaving to go overseas and go do whatever. I speak to many South Africans, and that's one of their key challenges. Rural voters have been suffering as a result. If you're a mother in Limpopo, suddenly your child can't go to university there because the University of Turf has literally not been functioning well. So you've got to send your kid to UJ and expose them to a risk of them being away from home and all the issues that go with that sometimes. And sometimes to profound hunger, where these young people are no longer located within their communities but are having to study far from home. So rural voters have seen a lot, have seen the fact that when you and I lament load shedding, for them sometimes it's days without electricity. When we talk about water, water shedding has become quite a serious issue in rural communities. The communities I've been to, Limpopo, Eastern Cape, haven't had water. KwaNobuhle, a community in Qabega, you arrive there, you walk around, they've had months without water. So these are issues that rural voters are very alive to. The job we've got to do is get there and ensure that we communicate a message of change. And I really believe we've also got to strip away from just being overly reliant on some of the traditional leaders who get benefits from this current government and try and influence people adversely. Let's go talk to the people and get them out to vote.
What's your forecast for the election next year? What do you think the outcome is going to be?
The ANC is going to be below 50%. I certainly think that they can't keep the lights on and certainly are not going to employ young people, which is our biggest crisis on our hands. I think we're going to have an interesting election. I'm confident that we'll do well. I think there's a moment in our nation. I think our moment is now. I think as we've seen all over the world, people like Emmanuel Macron, people like Sam Matakatsa, so many have come in and swept and brought about change. South Africa is going to go through that moment. It's not hope. It's not being pioneerish. It's about listening to people and hearing where people are at, and people actually are desperate for change. And so I'm confident that next year will be a change election.
Musi Maimane, thank you very much.
Much appreciated, huh?